Oftentimes, it's better to start with creativity to help you learn the facts.
Life is too short to learn a list of 1,000 rando words.
From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In with your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford, and I am with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, who is dean of the Graduate School of Education.
Well, Dr. Denise off the cuff Pope, today today is going to be an unusual show.
Yes.
I want to warn the listeners, I'd like to give you a trigger alert that we may get really silly because Denise and I decided that we would have the number one show. This is the number one show. And the way this works is we each get to ask a question and then we both have to give our number one answer to that question. Do you understand these rules, Denise?
I understand the rules. So the way I understood it when you first presented to me is I ask you a question about, and you give your number one answer. And I also thought that the top use of something or the top priority or the top whatever had to be in the question. So I've got number one. You have to give your number one answer, but I actually thought that had to be in the question, Dan. Oh. So it's going to be very interesting.
Okay.
It's going to be very interesting.
So Denise does not know the questions I'm going to ask. I may not know the questions I'm going to ask. So
We have not shown each other our questions. This is a true test because, you know, Dan likes competition. You know that.
That. Only when there's a possibility of somebody being a winner.
We may both be losers at the end of this show, Dan. Okay, do I get to go first?
Yes, please.
Okay, I get to go first. All right. Number one, Dan, you speak in front of large groups all the time. I would like to know the number one question that you get asked when speaking in front of large groups.
Is this as dean or as professor?
I would like you to choose your preference as dean or professor. Number one question you get asked, and then you must answer it.
The number one... New rules. I think the number one question as professor, particularly if I'm talking about technology, is young children. How much is too much technology for young children?
That is a great question. So, Dan, how much is too much?
Well, my first answer is usually a little glib. I say, if you're asking me that question, then it's too much.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
It's a little snarky. And then I point out, from what I can tell in the literature, the real issue identified so far is opportunity cost, that the time you're spending on the screen means you're not doing other things instead. And for young kids, that's the concern. Older kids, you get worried about addiction, but...
Yeah, I think it's a big topic right now.
So, Denise, what is the number one question that you get asked?
So the number one question I get asked, usually I'm speaking to parents, so large groups of parents, about stress and well-being and how they can get balance in their kids' lives. So the number one question I get asked is, okay, you're from Stanford, and Stanford is part of this problem. Because it's so hard to get into Stanford. What are they doing? What is Stanford doing about this? Because Stanford is part of the problem of student stress in schools. That is literally the number one question I get asked.
So did you say to them, if you give me $20, I'll help you?
Yeah.
How do you answer that?
Because that's the number one question I get asked when I'm speaking to students, is how do I get into Stanford?
Right, right.
Right? So it's a little bit different. So how do I answer the parents? I always say some good news. Stanford actually recognizes that it's part of the problem. And they are doing some things to actually help the situation. So one of the things that Stanford just announced that they're no longer doing is they're no longer going to tell what percentage of kids got admitted because it's historically the lowest in the country. It's something under 5%. And they feel that that's fueling some of the stress. So that's a little baby step that they've done. They've also, well, that's baby step, but hey, at least they're doing it, right? They have changed their essay questions. They've eliminated an essay question to get in. They are very transparent that it's not the person who takes the most APs at their school or has a perfect GPA or perfect test scores who get in. So they're trying to be very transparent about dialing down the stress.
So what kind of answer do you think they want? Do they want to say Stanford will do a random selection?
You know what parents want? They want their kids to go to Stanford. And they don't even know why. they haven't even really thought out if this is the right place for their kid. They truly believe, unfortunately, that the name of the school that you go to is going to write your ticket to success in life.
Not to be completely naive about it, but you know, it is a good place to go to school. It's not just the brand.
No. It's a great place to go to school, but it's about fit. And there are 3,000 four-year accredited universities in the United States, and there are really, really, really great places to go to school. And we can only take 1,600 people. 75% of the people who apply to Stanford would be a perfect fit, according to the dean of admissions here. And he can only take such a small percentage.
I think people are really unhappy with your answer.
Yeah, they're not too happy.
Okay, my turn. So now it's my turn.
Okay.
Dr. Pope.
Yes.
What is the number one question you wished people would ask you?
Oh, that's a good one, Dan.
Thank you.
Okay, this is the number one question I wish people would ask me. What can I do to increase the well-being of my child? What is the one thing I can do that would really make a difference to make sure that my kid is healthy, well-adjusted, happy?
You're the one who said you also have to have an answer.
Yeah. So I will tell you, and I think you know this because we've talked about this on the show before, they need to make sure their child gets enough sleep. That is literally one of the most important things they can do. And I wish they would ask me, if you could do one thing, right? If you could do one thing as a parent, what is the thing that you would want every parent in this world to do? Honestly, right now, given what we know about the research on sleep, is make sure your kid gets enough sleep. Because when they don't, it correlates with mental health issues and anxiety and depression. It correlates with obesity. It correlates with learning issues and memory problems, right?
So my son was a very good sleeper.
And okay.
It's been like 12 hours. He's sleeping.
Yeah.
Am I really supposed to say, go back to bed?
So your son as a teenager probably slept 12 hours on a weekend, right?
No, he was gifted. He was sleep gifted.
What does that even mean?
He now travels a lot on planes. He gets on the plane, he just falls asleep.
Oh, he can sleep anywhere. That's a blessing.
No, he's sleep gifted.
That is serious. No, yeah. That's good. That's good.
Okay.
All right.
My turn.
Your turn.
What question do I wish people asked?
Yes.
I'll answer that as a dean. I think it is, Dan, how much money can I give you for the school? That's the number one I wish they asked.
How much money can I give you?
Yes. And I can answer that question as much as you have. It would be great. It would just be great.
And
how
do you think that's really, you said people weren't happy about my answer. How do you think people are going to feel about your answer, sir?
Only as much as you can spare. How's that? Is that a better answer?
This is School's In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. And today we are not speaking with a guest. We are speaking with each other about the number one questions and top priorities, and it's the number one show. It's the number one show.
It is the number one show, and I'm going to go third.
Okay.
I went second, and I'm going to go third.
Yes, that's fair. That's fair. We volley like this. Yes.
Okay. So, what is the number one misconception about education?
Boy, that's a hard one. Okay. What is the number
Because there's so many?
Yes. Don't you think there's some? Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll see when you answer it what you say. Okay. Off the top of my head, the number one misconception about education is that the better grades you get, the more successful you'll be. The smarter you are and the more successful you'll be. I think when I'm going to put this in terms of what kids' misconceptions, okay? So I'm tweaking it a little bit.
That's fine.
Kids' misconceptions are, if I don't get a good grade, I am dumb, I am not worthy, and I will be a failure. And that is a complete misconception.
Wow.
And that happens a lot.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it's really, they take this to heart. Well, and if you think about it, everything is now in a kid's life is sort of starting to be measured. I mean, I just listened to a podcast from the Happiness Lab at Yale, and there are kids who are freaking out that their Fitbit doesn't show that they've walked 10,000 steps. And it's a measurement of how much they were able to do this day. And so they use it and they're like, I'm going to get the 10,000. I'm going to go above the 10,000. I'm going to get the A. I'm going to do what it takes to get an A. I'm going to do what it takes to get all the likes on social media. There's all these extrinsic measures now.
So those are interesting. Now I understand why you are a qualitative researcher. Because everything you mentioned is quantifiable. And you think quantifiable is the devil.
I don't think quantifiable is the devil. I'm just saying certain things that we've been doing to kids is making them think that they are losers when they are not. And it's actually pretty serious. There's some pretty serious health concerns when you are feeling like you're told over and over again that you don't measure up.
And the correct response when my kid doesn't measure up?
It's not that you don't so you didn't measure up on this test, on this day, and this one, you know. There's lots and lots of ways that you measure up, right? I'm your mom. I love you unconditionally, and we'll support you, and we're going to make sure you have a growth mindset. So it didn't happen today, but it didn't happen yet.
That's good. It feels a little bit like past girlfriends who say, Dan, it's not you, it's me.
Do you have experience with that, Dan?
A few times.
Okay, now you answer. What is the biggest misconception in education according to Dan Schwartz?
I think it is, this is more from the dean's vantage where I talk to lots of different stakeholders outside of education as well as inside.
That's good.
And I think the misconception is people say, This ship is too big to turn. We can't move it.
The ship is education.
The ship
of
education
is
too hard to move. And
what do they mean by move?
To change, to fix everything.
To fix it. Okay, to fix it.
And so and then what follows after that is magical thinking. Well, maybe if I just got a bigger rudder. Mm-hmm. It would be able to turn the ship faster. Mm-hmm. So the misconception here is that is not what education is. It's not a big ship. It's like a harbor filled with 1,000 different types of ships going different directions. It's incredibly decentralized. Parochial schools are quite different than military schools. They have different values and different goals. And so the idea that there's this one ship that you could just fix, it's just not the nature of the beast.
I like that, but can you fix the harbor? Can you fix all the boats in the harbor?
Well, I have my theory about how you make progress on it.
Well, do tell.
Well, the thing that's the same for all these boats, whether they're sailboats or dinghies, is there's learners on them. And so you focus on the nature of the learner, right? As opposed to, that's my bet. There's some people who say, well, you should focus on labor, teacher contracts, unions, other people about
money,
technology. You know, AI. But I think the way you have the most success is you're student-centered. You understand the needs of particular groups of students on that ship, and you design towards them.
Dan, you and I are getting more and more in common.
Except for mine, I want to count.
This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We have a special episode today. No guests, just Denise and Dan talking about questions. I haven't seen the ones that he has for me. He hasn't seen the ones that I have for him. And we're up to the next question.
So I think you're winning 2-1.
I'm winning? This is not a competition. Again with the competition.
No, I think two of your answers were much better than mine.
No, I like the harbor answer.
But I think my harbor was a winner.
I like the harbor answer.
Okay.
Is it my turn? All right.
You're up.
This is. I think you'll be able to answer this in a way, and I probably won't be able to answer my own question. I'm going to get in trouble here. All right. What do you think in the future should be the top use of technology to improve schools? In the future, top use of technology to improve schools?
First-person shooter games.
Okay, Dan.
No, I think... sorry. I think the technology, a lot of people view it as a way to be more efficient. We can do things faster. We could replace teachers with automated technologies. I think what technology can do is it two things. It allows you to teach in new ways that we couldn't do before. And so I like that. So learning from simulations, you know, I can do a weather simulation on a computer. Couldn't do that before. The second is bringing lots of feedback to the learners and the teachers and the policymakers. So technology is very good at being responsive. You know, so
tell, like, say a little bit more about that. I'm not sure people understand what that means. Different feedback to the learners.
So as a college professor, if it were up to me, I would have students write essays a lot. I don't want to grade them and give feedback.
Okay.
Technology will be able to do that.
You're going to just like zip it into a machine and some robot's going to read it and say, this is an A.
No, they're actually going to give useful feedback.
Oh, so the robot is going to be able to say, your analysis here is lacking, you need more evidence here.
Yes.
That's pretty funky.
Yes, and it won't be perfect. But then again, when I write comments in papers, they're not perfect. But anyway, I think the technology is more about getting information in the hands of learners and teachers so they can do better, as opposed to making strict pathways that students are supposed to follow so they can get to the goal faster.
Like sitting in front of a playlist is not your idea of a great use of technology.
A playlist where if you get one wrong, you go back to the earlier song on the playlist.
Yeah.
So, Denise, you asked this question.
I know.
Do you have an answer?
When I thought of this question, I didn't know that we would have to answer the questions that we gave each other. So
the answer is, what will be the best use of technology in the future? Or
to improve schools.
And your answer is that you will be able to plug things into your brain that do stuff for you.
No, here's honestly, okay, to all the carpool mom and dads out there, I want to see the best use of technology is to how to make that carpool line shorter. Everybody, how to make it more organized, how to make it go faster. I'm sure there's technology out there that will do that. I'm sure it's just out there waiting to be discovered, and there will be so many happy people.
I think it's called like rapid transit.
Yeah,
as opposed to cars.
It is. It's called take the bus or take the train. Okay, we've solved that.
Okay.
We've solved that. You got the next one?
If you'd like.
Yeah, we're coming up to a break, but ask it. It'll be the cliffhanger.
Denise Pope, what is the number one trick for improving someone's learning?
Trick?
Or not trick. Tip.
Tip? Okay. Yeah. Is it a trick? If it's a trick, magic wand involved.
No, you're not.
This is like a real. This is a real tip.
Yeah. What if you were going to do one thing to improve someone's learning? What would you do?
If I was going to do one thing, can't I just say they need to sleep again? And they... No. Okay. I will give you my answer when we come back. This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We will have more question and answer with Denise and Dan next on Sirius XM.
This is Schools In.
I'm not an expert at this. Okay. I'm more expert than you.
When you can't read in American society, you are really left out.
With Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope
from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. It is a special show today with no guest, just Dan and Denise posing questions to one another. We have not seen these questions. We have not heard what the other person is going to ask us. And so right before the break, Dan asked me a question.
I did. And so let me refine it. What is the sort of one tip that you might suggest for that one can use to improve someone else's learning?
So, okay, I'm gonna go a little bit weird here. The Latin root of the word assessment is accedere.
It's not ass.
It's not ass.
Oh.
It's accedere. And accedere means to sit beside. And so the number one thing that you can do, isn't that cool? It was like mind-blowing for me, right? The number one thing that you can do to improve someone's learning is to literally one-on-one sit beside them, talk to them, find out, ask them what they know, right? And figure out how to get them there.
Boy, we're really close on this.
Are we really?
Yeah.
Come on. Didn't know the Latin root of
No.
Assessment.
I'm just a country lawyer. I don't know these fancy things. No, it was show interest.
Yes.
Show interest. And
show interest in the learner.
Yeah. Yeah. Show interest. And a positive interest, not like,
right.
You know, scolding interest.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a very famous Jewish quote, which is be a learner and find yourself a teacher, right? Everyone needs to find themselves a teacher. And that's really how people learn. And you gotta show interest, sit beside them.
Yeah.
Dan, we're having some mind meld today that we never have. Okay, wait, whose turn is it?
It's yours.
Okay, my turn. All right. What should be the top priority for a school of education You are the dean of one of the top schools of education in the entire country. What should the top priority be for a school of education?
Oh, my God. This is, you know, I have to give like all these vision speeches.
I know. You could have, you answer this all the time.
I do.
And this is kind of an easy, I'm throwing you a real easy one.
So the thing that's hard about this is there's different types of schools of education.
Ah, fair.
So there's a lot of schools of education where their primary mission is to produce teachers. Mm-hmm. And we really need that. You know, there's 2.1 million teachers, that more than doctors, lawyers, engineers combined. Stanford School of Education is small. You know, we only have 300 students. Half of them are PhD students. So, you know, our responsibility has to be around sort of research and model programs. And so that's where you invest, is that we have to do, you know, high integrity, daring, relevant research. It's a different answer than what you wanted, which was for me to say the single most important thing is to make sure that all children get applesauce at noon. But, you know, I think the vision for the school is around the research. And then, you know, there's two pressing issues right now. One is our ability to reach all learners. So we've gotten pretty good at reaching average learners, you know, but that's...
Have we? Have we, Dan?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I think we've gotten... getting to them and them getting what we deliver, which all is the second point.
Ah.
But, you know, we need to get better at reaching learners who've been marginalized. They're underrepresented. They come with different backgrounds. And it's sort of not what the research was really doing 30 years ago. And now it is. And so this is really, you know, this equity representation. The second thing that's really important is we need to change what we think students need to learn. So it was very much mastery focused. You know, the goal is to get these kids to have mastery. It's a great idea, except you go into a world where you change jobs and the world keeps changing around you. And so mastery is kind of a recipe for disaster. What you really need is you need people to be prepared to keep on learning and to make choices about how to learn in a world that keeps changing. So I think this is really an important issue as well, because like I said, we've gotten good at teaching average people to have mastery, and it's just not adequate.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are speaking with just Denise and Dan today, no guests, on some funky little questions, and we are finding that we're more similar than different. Let's see. I don't know. I shouldn't have said that before the next
now,
one.
Now
okay,
I wanna,
your
now
next I was, one. What are you gonna? This is what are you gonna say?
So I'm a simpler guy than you.
Okay.
So again, I'm going for simple things.
Okay.
So what is the number one thing you tell a teacher?
Wow. The number one thing I tell a teacher is see the students before you, like really see them, right? It goes back to sort of the get to know them and show interest, but really see them as full human beings. See the student as a full human being. Because, you know, when you're a teacher, you see them, well, if you're an elementary teacher, you're spending, the day with them. When you're a secondary school teacher, you see them just here and there. And it's really hard to remember that they have lives outside of school.
People forget this.
Yeah.
Everybody else that they know has a mental life that's as profound to them as yours is to yours.
Yes.
And they sort of forget that.
Yes.
That there's a lot going on under the hood.
Well, it's hard. You're a teacher. You have a lot of things on your plate. You have a lot of expectations. You are required to get through the textbook or make the test scores or whatever. And it's hard to see them as not just English, period three student B.
Right.
It's hard. And that's not, by the way, how schools are designed to allow teachers really to see the whole kid.
No, the more responsibility on the student.
The system is tough. The system is tough. All right, mister, right back at ya.
So the number one thing I would tell a teacher?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, Dan, that's so nice.
I thought that was warm.
I like that one.
It's fuzzy.
Oh.
It's true.
Thank you. Let's just
true.
Do a shout out right now. Do you have a teacher you want to thank? Probably who's still alive. Maybe not still alive. Do you have a teacher who you're like, I wish I thanked that person back when? Come on. Oh, because you thanked them?
No, because I'm too self-centered.
Oh, come on.
It wasn't until I grew up that I realized sort of how good they were and how much they gave.
You know what teacher I want to thank? And I never did. And I actually wrote about this once. there was a teacher way back in high school who was talking to us as we were graduating, and she looked us in the eye and she said, hey, you're all going to go off and do all these amazing things and do all that. She said, consider teaching. Consider teaching. And I promise you, her voice, I can totally see her saying it, and it made a difference to me. I didn't, when I went off, I was like, yeah, right, I'm never going to do that. But then in college, I was like, hey, consider teaching. Totally helped shape my life.
Wow.
Thank you to that teacher.
Wow.
It's Miss Jimenez, by the way. I have no idea if she's still alive or if she's still
out there. All right, props to Miss Jimenez.
Props to Miss Jimenez.
Really good.
Okay, I've got a question for you. Are you ready?
This is the last.
This is it.
I'm so exhausted
this
from
is
this.
It. This is it, Dan.
It's much easier to just ask people to talk about themselves.
This is, well, it's, you're getting at my question here.
Oh, what talk is the about
top,
yourself.
What is the top reason that people should continue to listen to this podcast after this particular episode?
Because you have a golden voice and a great way of summarizing things. And because maybe it answers or raises some questions about the single most important thing in human existence.
Which is education.
Which is learning. And education is the institution that delivers it.
That's pretty good. And also, flattery will get you everywhere.
Yeah, I'm counting on it.
So I'm going to answer the top reason why people should continue to listen to this podcast. It's the reason why I love doing this podcast. One is because of you, Dan. Love our little brother-sister relationship. Come on, give me some props here. Okay. But two is I learn something every single time. It's really cool to interview guests and learn something every single time. And I learned something from you in this show. I learned that we're actually much more aligned than I knew. I kind of knew that.
Yeah.
But we promise we'll have guests next time because this is exhausting.
So, well, thank you for playing the number one game with me. It would have been better if we either had six cups of coffee or something else, but... For us, for the audience, it was perfect. This is what I'm saying.
Are you saying that they weren't riveted?
I have no idea. I have no idea what goes on out there.
Write in and let us know if you would like to see a show like this again in the future.
Right. Email denise.pope.send.your.complaints.
All right. We are done with the top show. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Denise.
Thanks for being a great guest. Thank you all for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app, iTunes, or SoundCloud.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope on SiriusXM Business Radio. If you missed any of it, listen on demand, online, or with the SiriusXM app.